The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Thank you. It's been 4 days since we chatted. A lot's happened since then. Want to get in touch? Whatever's on your mind, text, email, call and WhatsApp. Call 66 13 68. Text and WhatsApp on 166177. Email studio at maxradio.com. What do you think about Ramsey MHK Laurie Hooper intimating that couples who just live together, aren't married, aren't in a civil partnership, be able to, for tax purposes, be jointly assessed? What do you think about that? Think it's a good idea? Do you think it will be workable? Maybe you work in the tax office. Maybe you can tell us. Anyway, whatever's on your mind, we're at a critical point. This is Big John in Ramsey. Thank you, Big John. He's on, he's WhatsApp at 857, Big John in Ramsey, who says, we're at a critical point regarding the gas supply, so the sooner we get Erie Stain on board, the better. I don't think Erie Stain will come on in the very short term. But anyway, that's Big John. Big John's view from Ramsey. Erie Stain as soon as possible. Howard's with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. I thought today we had Teresa Cope on.
Later on this week.
Oh, well, that's my mistake then, because I was wanting to pass a question on to her. But that's irrelevant now. But just regarding Larry Hooper's idea.
Yeah.
Well, if you're cohabiting, you are still single people, so you should be charged the income tax rate as a single person. If you're married, if you're cohabiting full-time, and you maybe have a child, I don't know what the sequence is there, but if you're just living together, moving around, sofa surfing, I don't see any reason why you should get a reduced tax bill. I know a friend of mine who's just lost his wife last year, and the poor lady was not gone very long, and the tax office immediately sent him a letter saying you are now a single man and your tax rate will go up, because they were obviously claiming the joint assessment. But why should single people who are living in the same house claim the benefit of not paying single person tax?
Yeah, I just wonder how this would be assessed, and you know, if people are just living together, as I mean, obviously this is a relatively recent phenomenon. How you'd know whether or not they split up? I mean, they could have an argument on a Saturday night and split up on a Sunday, and which one's going to tell the tax office?
And will they be back again on Tuesday?
Well, there we are.
So the whole thing would be a complete mess. At least at the moment you have a line in the sand, and you have one side, you pay the higher rate of tax, the other side, you receive the benefits of being married or permanently cohabiting. But what happens if you've got a flat and there's about six people in that flat and all related? Do they all get the cohabiting tax benefit? No, it's a very slippery slope, Mr. Hooper, and one I think you're going to regret.
Okay. By the way, Howard, I must ask you, how was the camera obscura over the Easter weekend?
Excellent. Thank you for your help in your broadcasting. We had a very good weekend. Yesterday was exceptional, and a lot of locals turned up to see what we have up there to offer.
All right. Many new faces?
Oh, quite a lot. Quite a lot of new faces, and visiting with people from Aberystwyth down there, talking about their obscura, which is entirely different to the one we've got. Portugal, South Africa. It's amazing the number of people that's on the island here on holiday from the various parts of the world. But yes, it was an excellent weekend for the Obscura. Just got a few jobs to do now, and then we'll be open permanently for the summer.
Okay, so when do you open? When does that open?
I'm not altogether sure. Peter, he'll probably put something on the radio for it. But there is a little bit of maintenance work to do beforehand.
Okay.
After the two storms.
All right, appreciate that.
Yeah, but Larry Cooper, be careful what you wish for.
Okay.
You could be putting a whole can of worms there that you can no longer put back.
All right. All right, Howard, good to hear from you. Thanks for being with us.
Okay, take care.
Okay, yes, Camera Obscura was open across the weekend. The Victorian Society were in attendance, as was Howard. And I'm guessing the 3 weeks on Monday is the early May bank holiday. So we'll find out as soon as we know that the Camera Obscura is going to be open. Most weekends, of course, certainly Sundays. But crikey, can you believe it? 3 weeks on Monday is the early May bank holiday. And I think it is 6 weeks on Monday, TT starts. I know, crikey, can you believe it? Lord above. And 3 weeks after that, the World Cup's on. Jointly assessing cohabitant couples will make no difference to two individuals both using up the single allowance, but it will reduce tax income if one's not working. So, Mr. Hooper, where will he get the money from to maintain levels of government spending, says Gaz. Laurie Hooper, Ramsey MHK, believes that couples who live together but aren't either A, married, or B, in a civil partnership should be able to, for tax purposes, be jointly assessed. He said the current system treats people in long-term committed relationships unfairly, and he's going to bring a motion to Tynwald later on this month on the matter.
So this is actually an issue that came up a number of years ago, actually, shortly after I was first elected, if I'm perfectly honest, and it's been something I've been trying to push the Treasury into for some time. So we have a bizarre situation on the island where we have this system of joint taxation, which I think is actually really good. But you can't use that joint taxation unless you have a formal relationship status. You've got to be married or a civil partner. But there are quite a lot of people on the island who are in long-term committed relationships who haven't decided not to get married, decided they don't want to be a civil partner for whatever reason. And they're not able to avail themselves of the same system that the rest of us can. And that's never really felt fair. And actually, it does disadvantage people on the island simply because they've made a decision not to get married or not to enter into a civil partnership. And that doesn't seem fair to me. So the reason for tabling it really now is because it's just an opportune moment. It just feels like it's part of a conversation that we were having around budget time, and I just thought actually there's no downside now in trying to take the next step and trying to get Tynwald to formally endorse this position.
Would you support a strict legal registry for cohabitants, or a minimum, say, living together period? How would it be defined?
So I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding here, because the Treasury already allow cohabiting couples to apply for joint taxation, or at least to share tax allowances if they have a child. So the Treasury have already got a system in place that says if you are cohabiting and you have a child, we're okay with treating you this way. So the Treasury fully understand what is meant by a cohabiting couple. They have a system in place. They have a section of the Income Tax Act that already deals with cohabiting couples. This isn't a new concept for income tax. It's not a new concept for the Treasury. It's something they already do in certain specified circumstances. And those circumstances are that the cohabiting couple have a child together. So defining a cohabiting couple is something that income tax law has already done. It's already in the law as to what is meant by cohabiting. It's already something that's quite well defined and well understood by the Treasury. So if the Treasury Minister's position is we don't know how to define cohabiting couples, then I would respectfully suggest he has another read of the income tax legislation, because it is squarely in there.
Laurie Hooper. It's he'll be bringing forward that motion 2 weeks today. The Tynwald setting gets underway 21st of April, Tuesday 21st. We've contacted the Treasury for the Treasury Minister, Mr. Thomas, to respond to that. I just wonder what your thoughts are. At the moment, you have to be married or in a civil partnership to be able to claim joint assessment for tax. Laurie Hooper thinks that if you're just in a relationship, you should be able to. Any thoughts on this? Your caller, Frank, last Thursday spoke very highly of owning an EV and said he'd had it in 6 or 7 years. Six in 7 years. 6 in 7 years makes me wonder about reliability. or Frank hasn't owned one long enough to encounter issues renewing tyres and batteries. Well, he was very keen on it. Frank said he loved his EV. He's got a Volkswagen EV, I think it is, and said that he didn't think it was the future, but it's okay for the moment. Have you noticed lots of new poles showing up around central Douglas? It looks like it will be the, could be the introduction of a new 20-mile-per-hour zone around schools. Perhaps Ballacamine or Henry Bloom Noble. I've contacted DOI for more information, as I don't think it's been clearly communicated. Have you spotted poles going up near Ballacamine High School and Henry Bloom Noble? Possibly that may be for 20-mile-per-hour. We'll find out. We'll see. This story about social media is really interesting, isn't it? Some parents on the Isle of Man reckon that the recent ruling in America regarding smartphone apps should be a wake-up call for the Manx government. In California recently, a trial found that Meta, this is the huge corporation that owns Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp and Google, and YouTube, intentionally designed social media platforms to be addictive. In response to recent questions, the Manx government said it's got no plans to ban social media for under-16s, but will, quote, continue to monitor international debate on the issue, close quote. What do you think? We've talked about, when Man in Line's been out at schools, at the high schools, we've talked about this. Of course, in Australia, it's happened. How do you think that could be, you know, banning social media for under-16s? How do you think that would happen over here? Would you back that? And could anybody actually enforce it? Any thoughts on that? Text, email, call and WhatsApp. And Peter's with us now. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Andy.
It's before we go, full disclosure here. This is Peter Shimmin, Prospective MHK. Am I right?
That's right. I'm standing for Douglas Central.
OK, well, let's get that out of the way. This is not an election thing, but you're talking about the 20-mile-per-hour zones.
Yeah, so I was on Devonshire Road and Albany Road the other day, and I noticed new poles being put up with traffic cones around them. So I got in touch with the DOI to ask, because obviously the infrastructure minister came and said the 20 miles per hour zone has been completely stopped or paused, but these have started appearing. So it transpires they're doing a consultation, or they've just finished a consultation on bringing those 20 miles per hour zones in around schools. I think it's just closed, so I would question exactly when these polls went up in line with when the consultation ended, and whether that just means all of the residential areas around the schools will now be 20 miles an hour.
What's your feeling?
Well, I mean, I think everyone can support the idea of it being around schools. You know, that's around the safety of the young people who are walking around and crossing the roads. But the main thing is that this is badly communicated to everyone if this is the case, because if the infrastructure minister has said it's stopped, but actually it's happening in the background, this is exactly what happened the first time when it was going to be rolled out without proper consultation. So I'm sure they may have done the statutory requirements of putting a notice in the paper, but people are really sensitive about this issue and want to know when these changes are coming in. So I think it could have been better communicated if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, certainly around Ballacamine, it was Anne Caller to MHK, of course, who started all this with the 20 is Plenty campaign around schools. So presumably this will be vindication for Mrs. Corlett.
Indeed, but it's grown arms and legs, hasn't it? So I agree with Mrs. Corlett and many people around having safer zones around schools where people are safer on the roads. But at the end of the day, the people need to know if a change is coming, what that means, when it's going to take effect, and also how strictly is it going to be enforced.
OK, all right. Peter, we appreciate your call. Thanks for talking to us today.
Cheers. Thank you, Andy.
All right, 19 minutes past 12 on Max. I got a message in from Wolfie in Andreas, and Wolfie says to me, does anybody know what is going on with Ramsey commissioners? What on earth is happening in Ramsey? The town clerk was suspended quite a while ago following issues happened. The town clerk has been suspended now for over 3 months. an issue that in the private sector would have been resolved in 3 minutes. And this has cost the ratepayer in Ramsey many thousands of pounds. This is Wolfies, with no end in sight. Well, we talked about this in the past, and I didn't know whether it... Well, apparently it's all still going on in Ramsey. According to the most recent reporting, Derek Flint, the town clerk at Ramsey Town Commissioners, remains suspended, it is said, on full pay. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not, whether it is on full pay. The investigation is ongoing. The suspension relates to a complaint about how an issue involving public comments by a commissioner was handled. In the latest news, I think it was March last month, no final outcome's been announced and the investigation is still in progress. There's also been confirmation more broadly that Ramsey's been operating without a permanent or active clerk during this period. I think the deputy's looking after it, but we remain to get official notice of that. There's no detailed public explanation given for his absence. The complaint was against Derek Flint, the Ramsey town clerk, related to how he handled a specific incident involving a commissioner's public comments. Now, this is all on the public record. This is a Ramsey commissioner, Elizabeth Shimmin, who posted on Facebook about the American activist Charlie Kirk. Do you remember Charlie Kirk was shot in a public forum, was shot in the neck and killed? And Elizabeth Shimmin posted on Facebook that he should, quote, burn in hell. The post caused controversy and was later deleted. At a board meeting, the vice chair stated the matter was under criminal investigation, although the police confirmed that no further action would be taken. The complaint against Derek Flint is not about the post itself, but about how he handled the situation involving governance process and possibly communications. The commissioners reported... self-reported a data breach linked to the same situation. And here we go. So we don't quite know what's happened. All we do know is, and we don't know this for certain, it was reported in the newspapers that Mr. Flint was on full pay. Now, again, full disclosure, this was perfectly publicly available. When the job was advertised, the town clerk's job was advertised at Ramsey Commissioners, it was billed at about £72,000. Per annum. So if Mr. Flint has been suspended, he has been suspended, if he's been on full pay, that's a significant chunk of ratepayers' money that's gone out, and we still don't know what's happening at Ramsey Town Commissioners. If you've got any thoughts on this, and if Ramsey Town Commissioners want to come and have a chat on Manx Radio or contact the news department, we're more than happy to clarify the whole situation. But Wolfie said that this would have been sorted out in the private sector in 3 minutes. Well, perhaps not 3 minutes. Maybe that's a figure of speech. But this has cost the ratepayer in Ramsey, if Mr. Flint is still being paid, tens of thousands of pounds, and there's no end in sight. Wolfie, we will keep on asking the questions, and as soon as we get some answers, then we'll let you know. So, is social media addictive? Well, of course it's addictive, and of course the companies design it that way. Jessica Cross and John Bolton on the Isle of Man see the recent verdict as a watershed moment. And they've told Manx Radio they want the Isle of Man to take notice about this. The fact that the trial in California found that Meta, the company that owns Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, Google, YouTube, intentionally designed social media platforms to be addictive.
I was surprised, but for once in a pleasant way, because I was delighted that finally there is... We've known, or there's been suspicion around, that it is addictive, and there is now evidence that Meta knowingly created these algorithms to be addictive. And I think, hurrah, as parents, we've finally got concrete evidence to say, look, big tech knows it's doing wrong, and we want to change.
I don't think we can really say we're going to see what the UK does anymore. I would expect our government, as I said last time we was here, quite happily champions the agile, independent line, which is great, well, let's be agile and independent. Why are we waiting for the 26th of May?
Meta and Google say they disagree with the verdict and intend to appeal. Meta said teen mental health is profoundly complex and cannot be linked to a single app. Meanwhile, reacting to the verdict, UK Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer said the status quo was not good enough and more needed to be done to protect children. That reaction from the UK Prime Minister, we, like you mentioned there, Chief Minister Alfred Cannon says that the Isle of Man will be keeping a watching brief on that situation. That reaction from Keir Starmer, does that give you hope at all, Jess?
I think we've been too slow to act as a society. This has been around now nearly 20 years since the social media, and it's rapidly changed since. I think we've got to be thinking faster, and as we await all of these things, it just evolves and moves on, and then I just feel like we're always catching our tails. I don't know what the solution is. I don't think anybody does, really. But I think we've just got to be more proactive rather than reactive.
Jessica Cross and John Bolton on social media. And she's right, definitely. Social media is evolving. 20 years ago, didn't happen. I mean, there are the new generation that's now around today, they've never known anything but smartphones and social media. If you're older than 25 years of age, you'll remember when life was not as complicated as it is now. Social media will take up. I don't know if you get those weekly reports on your smartphone to tell you how much screen time you've had. Guaranteeing it's going up and up and up. Quite what we do, quite what the impact is going to have on young people. Maybe they'll just wise up and the whole problem will dry up and blow away. We don't know. But if you've got any thoughts, I'd appreciate them. The polls popping up around central Douglas are new. They're not just by the schools. As far as I'm aware, it's going ahead in central Douglas, just not the rest of the island, says Andrea. We'll find out. So the polls are going up anyway. You will find they'll be all over the place, says Kelly. The government think we, the public, are stupid, and they'll all be about 20 feet tall. We'll find out, shall we? Thank you, Tony. Yes, what you were talking about regarding Ramsey Town Commissioners, surely this has got to be sorted out one way or the other, says Tony. And Paul said, if Ramsey's managed without him for this long, well, we do live under the law of contract anyway, but we'll try and find out. Mr. Hooper's burned his bridges with some, pursuing the removal of the bishop's vote, now questioning the tax allowances, perhaps devalues the standing of marriage and legal partnerships. Good luck picking up a few votes at the expense of losing many others. Well, that's Gaz's advice to Mr. Hooper. Did top the poll last time, I must say. Well, any thoughts on this? This whole situation. By the way, we're not getting into who said what and to whom and who did this, that, and the other in the Ramsey situation, whether Elizabeth Shimmin or Mr. Flint or whoever. We're talking about the fact that this has taken so long. And we don't know that Mr. Flint has been suspended. Well, he has been suspended. Whether or not he's on full pay, we don't know. But if he is on full pay, that's a lot of money for a town clerk who isn't in situation. So we'll find out. Julian joins us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
What a lovely weekend.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to say it. You never know. It's probably going to start raining soon, so I'm not going to say it.
It is going to start raining on Thursday.
No, don't say it. You never know. It might pass us by. You watch the map sometimes, and it kind of goes round us, so you never know. The 20-mile-an-hour zone thing seems to be coming up again, as Mr. Shimmin said earlier. And we've had this conversation quite a few times now. Why can't they just put lights up around these areas? Because what is the point and the utility of having 20-mile-an-hour and the 14 weeks that the kids are off school on holidays, night times, etc., etc.? Why do you need to drive past a school at 20 miles an hour in the middle of summer at 3 in the morning? Yeah, what is the utility of that?
Well, you can probably guarantee, and I don't want to disparage taxi drivers, but in the middle of the night, you know, 3 or 4 in the night, the taxi drivers won't be doing 20 miles per hour past schools, will they?
No, that's right. And I do question, is this something to do with what the United Nations brought out in May of 2021 called Streets for Life Initiative, where they basically said that all towns and villages need to be at 30 kilometres an hour, which is just under 20 miles an hour. Is this yet another United Nations diktat that we're trying to sort of get in because we're being told to do it?
Well, the thing is, it would seem so simple to sort out because we've had it at Cueg School and other schools. We have those radar lights that come on that tell you that when the speed limit is applicable around those schools. So it would seem that they've got a template already for doing it around some schools.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I quite agree with you. And it works well. You know, everyone slows down with those things. I've not seen, I mean, unless somebody sees the odd one, but, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. There's always going to be a bad egg, isn't there, at some point or other. But the vast majority really do heed those lights.
Yeah, and it becomes, it's obviously apparent if you're driving near a school around, you know, home time and morning time and what have you, there are children around. There are parents dropping children off. It's common sense.
Yeah, I know. It just seems to me that this, to be honest, I would like to see the original votes reversed and the transport order reversed and just get rid of it, because it's going to be hanging over us in the future. If somebody else gets in the DOI and says we're doing this again, there's nothing to stop it. So I think that needs to be sorted out. Speaking of being told what to do by the other side, just interested to look at a local news outlet on the island that has been mentioning things like 7,341 worker route visas, which is about 9% of the island's population. That works out at 4,035 workers, but 3,306 dependents. So for every 10 workers, 8 dependents are arriving. If you scale that to the UK, that would be like adding 6 Birminghams onto the UK, roughly. And of course, you've got all the pressure on the schools, the GP surgeries, rental market. And it seems that two-thirds of all these worker visas to the island are coming from just 6 countries. So it doesn't look very random in terms of people just coming here to work. It also seems that DEFA and the UK-based contractor Evel and Jones, they were tasked with bringing meat inspectors over to the island. And there's an FOI, 463-2637, where the DEFA's head of environmental health admitted that it seems we have little, if any, negotiating power. So I just wonder, are we getting told to do stuff about who we bring over here and how many? And a lot of the FOIs have been heavily redacted. And I quote from the FOI, disclosure would be likely to provoke a negative reaction from another jurisdiction. So that effectively means that the Manx government can't tell us the information about what's going on in the labour market from bringing people in because of the sensitivities of another jurisdiction.
Presumably, anybody coming over has got to have a job anyway, because there'll be a work permit in place. So people aren't coming over to do nothing.
You hope so. I mean, let's hope that there aren't workarounds. I mean, there have been one or two people jailed, haven't there, for they're kind of here, and you wonder, you know, they need interpreters. I mean, I think there is a minimum language qualification with the visas. So
it makes you
wonder.
Yeah, and not only that, anybody who stays on the Isle of Man, anybody who has the leave to remain on the Isle of Man, they have to do the English language test. There's also the history test of the British Isles and what have you. So, I mean, anybody who comes here has to go through lots of hoops, and it costs hundreds, possibly thousands of pounds to do it, Julian.
Yeah. I mean, the local Isle of Man housing sector apparently has reported that some properties on the island have got 20 to 30 mattresses to a flat.
Where did you see that?
This is on Manx.news. So, this is part of these FOIs that have been redacted and looked at by a data analyst. And, you know, you kind of wonder, I mean, this is an awful lot of people coming here. And I know in 2016, it was revealed that 80% of students that were heading to university said they wouldn't be returning here. And then you look at the death rate is almost double the birth rate on the island, and you just wonder, there's going to be an awful lot of replacements.
That has always been a problem, though, Julian. Forever, the Isle of Man has lost population. It used to be years ago because we were tied to that to the visiting season, and because of in the winter, people just used to leave because there was no work whatsoever. So we've always had the problem of replenishing the population. The birth rate is a big issue on the Isle of Man because, bluntly, there aren't enough children being born to replenish the population. So, as you say, with the mortality rate being as it is, we have an older average population, so that's always going to be the case. So, you know, the government is always going to be faced with the issue of replenishing the population and, you know, bluntly, getting people in to do the jobs that we have, vacancies for.
The thing is, though, I mean, we're looking at those statistics, 4,035 workers with 3,306 dependents. If you've got every 10 workers, you've got 8 dependents. Well, you know, all we talk about is the Manx Care are overwhelmed with what's going on with trying to get people through the system. I don't know. It's an interesting conundrum, isn't it?
Point taken. Okay. Well, that's something we'll bring up on Thursday with Theresa Cope. Thanks, Julian.
All right, thanks, Andy. Cheers.
Yeah, this coming Thursday, the Manx Care Chief Executive, Theresa Cope, will be on Manx Radio chatting about, Manx Care. The big issues facing Manx Care in 2026 are widely agreed across government reports. There have been audits. The medical bodies have talked about them. And there are a few core themes, really, for Manx Care. Money. It's always about money. The structure, the workforce, and performance, specifically waiting times. So, obviously, Manx Care is under financial pressure. Whether or not the funding model is sustainable or not, well, we'll talk to Theresa Cope about that on Thursday. Obviously, the recent hoo-ha regarding the hospice and the support that Manx Care give. David Ashford mentioned things like the laundry and everything is done by Manx Care, aside of direct government funding. There's the governance confusion, really, with Manx Care. Who's in charge of Manx Care? Well, obviously, Theresa Cope is in charge of Manx Care, but alongside you have DHSC, the Department of Health and Social Care. And coincidentally, in a couple of weeks' time, Claire Christian will be in, the DHSC Minister, and her Chief Officer, Tim O'Neill. If you've got anything you want to say to Theresa Cope, you can either call, text, email or WhatsApp on Thursday, or call the answer phone on 682 631 in the meantime.
You may have noticed a little more noise than usual on Victoria Street. That's because Conestar Bank is having a makeover. We're refurbishing our office to create an even better experience for our customers, but it's business as usual. You can still visit us. Our temporary reception is just one floor up with our sister company Edgewater. The same team, the same friendly faces, and the same trusted service. We've been here for 90 years, and we're here to stay. Conestar Bank, built on trust, focused on you.
At Pagode Cattery, we've been caring for animals for over 50 years. As a cattery, we care for our customers' cats and treat them as our own. Visit pagode.com or call 321 989.
Manx Memorials in Ballasalla will guide you when creating beautiful, lasting memorials across the island. From a wide range of granite and marble headstones, custom inscriptions, expert renovations and pet memorials, adding care and compassion in every detail, we offer families peace of mind for years with perpetual grave care. We're there when you need them most. Call 843 861 or email matthew@manxmemorials.co.uk.
Many people are struggling. You can help by volunteering or making a donation to Isle of Man Food Bank, whether it be food or essential items or financial support. Please call 646 999, brought to you by Descon Office Interiors.
A new chapter is coming to Swiss Chalet Glen Helen this April. The all-new Isle of Man Farm Shop, Lodge and Bistro. Celebrating local Manx produce, people and pride, IOM Farm Shop, Lodge and Bistro brings together the island's farmers, fishers, growers and makers for an experience like no other on the island, nestled in the island's most beautiful valley. Enjoy the very best the island has to offer at the Isle of Man Farm Shop, Lodge and Bistro. Now open.
Hi. Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Texter 404 said, I think the people who've been living together full-time for 10, 20 or 30 years plus are the ones that Mr. Hooper is referring to. Pablo tells me there are new poles up around York Road as well. And again, Andrea says the ones popping up in central Douglas, not just for the schools. How are they going to police the 20 miles per hour? Not everybody will adhere to the speed limit, says 603. Well, we had this question all the way throughout when Michelle Haywood was punting for the 20 mile per hour limit. If the police say they can't, and they can't, then who is going to police it? Who's going to sanction? Would there be speed cameras here, there and everywhere? Nobody really came up with a definitive answer. Why haven't you given Ann Corlett and a second of Rob Callister the right to reply on the 20-mile-per-hour signage? The motion was only for around schools, says Darren. Well, they can call any time they want, Darren. That's what Man in Line's about. You can just pick up the phone, 66 13 68, although I'm guessing that Rob Callister will wait until next week, because a week tomorrow, Rob Callister's actually on Man in Line. Rob Callister will be here as the planning committee chair, of course, and Onken MHK. So this Thursday, Teresa Cope from Manx Care. And a week tomorrow, the 15th, Rob Callister will be on. So maybe we'll ask him about it then. Social media like Facebook should be banned for under 16s. Boys and girls these days have very little conversational skills. They can't go to pubs, so they go on dating apps. They go, oh, I see. I'm in my 60s and I find Facebook reels addictive, and so do many of my friends who text me links to them. I know. You get those. You'll love this. You'll love this. I saw this and thought of you. Really? Maybe if kids had no access to social media, they might get out and about and live a proper life, says Pat. Well, it's a thought, Pat, isn't it? And certainly there is a risk of limited socialisation nowadays. Obviously, the ruling on under 16-year-olds, this is Texter 696, not being able to use the internet, this will include a ban on children texting and calling their friends. If it does come into force on the Isle of Man, which is 99.9% possible, then under 16-year-olds should have places to go to where they can meet up with their friends and give them something to do instead of just walking the streets like we did in our youth pre-mobile phone days. The government has let down the Isle of Man's children regarding places for them to go, so it's well needed for the government to spend some serious money on the children. As let's face it, the taking away of mobile phone use is surely going to lead to more mental health problems with children. It's a thought, isn't it? And years ago when there were youth clubs, of course you've still got the scouts and what have you, but the socialisation for young people tends mainly to be on smartphones, on social media. It's an issue. Do we have any idea where it's going to go? No, nobody does. New arrivals on the Isle of Man, the vast majority are coming from outside our health and health tax collection area, says Texter 481. Is that true? Do these people get private healthcare benefits with their new jobs until maybe they've contributed enough to benefit from our scheme? Should this apply also to social housing? I think it's 10 years or so you have to have contributed to get social housing, but we'll find out for certain on that. It is interesting, as it was mentioned, that the amount of people who are coming to the Isle of Man, what's the implication on dependents? And certainly, we come back to Manx Care, the drawdown on Manx Care. Many local restaurant staff have recently been laid off to make room for migrant workers, says Ian. Is this true? Are you just making this up? Is this skeet? The Isle of Man is giving grants to hotels and restaurants to employ migrants. My son got fired, says Ian. Give me a bit more detail on that, would you, Ian? We'll take that as skeet at the moment. to find out more. I'll get to that question in just a few moments' time, shall I? Yes, well, in fact, we'll take Juan now. Hi, Juan.
Andy, how are you? Long time no speak.
Well, Juan, how are you?
I'm very good, very good. Yeah, just a couple of points. Just picking up on there with what Julian said. And you mentioned about, well, taxi drivers won't do 20 mile an hour at night time. But this point, when we spoke with Michelle Hayward at the time at the sea terminal, and there was a couple of logistics people that were speaking at the same time. And the issue with this is that if the police does enforce the 20 mile an hour areas, then they could pop out at any time in the morning, 3-4 o'clock, if someone is doing more than 20 mile an hour and find them. So this is the issue here, because it is a legal issue. So it'd be down to a case of whether the police or the individual police officer feels though he wants to book that person.
So you're saying again, that at that time in the morning, it would be an easy pinch to sit on somewhere like the Peel Road, because there's no traffic.
It could be suggested. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's down to an individual, whether you get a force or police officer or someone who wants to just fill their books up. So the fact that it would be legal would be the issue here. So if you're driving at 20 mile an hour, you take the chance on getting points on your license if you drove faster in the middle of the morning. So that's the issue that we're bringing up of logistics drivers. Delivery drivers would take longer to do calls because they would have to apply to the license. So that I think was the main issue with that, Andy. The other thing I was talking about would be the Ramsey Commissioner's situation that's going on. And I mentioned this right at the start when Derek got suspended. As I mentioned, that Walter Wannenberg was retiring quite some time ago. But this has dragged on for quite some time. And Derek is still very busy on the internet, on media and doing stuff. I mean, I've had quite a sword fence with him over the support of the armed police unit, which, of course, Derek was a high-ranking police officer over here. So he's very verbal on the commissioner's sites, but I say very experienced in law. And my point to Lizzie Shimmin when this broke out, as I had sword fenced with her on the internet, was how uncourteous she was to people with her comments, with the original comment that she had put out. And my point with this would be, for a person who's in public office and also an advocate on the island, where do you stop with your comments and your personal feelings? And everyone should have the right to reply. I totally agree with that. But surely there's a way in replying to people that is courteous and lawful.
Well, at the bottom of all this is the fact that, and we don't know, but Derek Flint has certainly been suspended. We don't know whether he's on full pay. If he is on full pay, that's a big chunk of ratepayers' money going out.
And that wouldn't surprise me either, Andy. I mean, we've had, among other things, two managers of the Villa Marina have been on full pay for many, many, quite a few years in the past. So the government is quite free when it comes to giving out money for people not doing the job. But that's an issue in itself. And again, why is it taking this long for the commissioners not to have sat down and sorted this out and made a decision? Because it's just procrastinating the inevitable.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't look good, does it? I mean, the fact is, we're not maligning anybody's competence as a commissioner or, the bureaucracy or what have you, but it doesn't look good to the ratepayer.
No, it doesn't. And I think, as far as I could see, Derek was well accepted at Ramsey when he got that position, and he's held a good position as a police commander before. So his point on lawfulness of speaking, I think, has probably got some point there. But my point with this, as I said, I was quite vocal about this when it all kicked off. In a person in public position, how far should they or can they go with what they said? And obviously, this is the case in issue, I would imagine.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Juan.
Cheers, Andy. Take care.
Okay, good to hear from you. We've checked the latest official and local authority information regarding housing and what have you. Across government guidance and local authorities like Douglas Council, applicants for public sector housing are normally required to have lived on the Isle of Man for 10 years, with additional requirements such as several years living in specific local authority areas. This 10-year residency rule is confirmed by the Department of Infrastructure and has been reiterated in Timwell responses. It can be waived in exceptional circumstances, so it's not 100%, for example, in cases involving serious health needs or domestic abuse. There's no evidence that new arrivals must pay into a separate health tax before accessing healthcare on the Isle of Man. Access to Manx Care Services is based on just being ordinarily resident here, not how long somebody's paid tax or where they're from. Private healthcare may be offered by employers. That's separate, of course, from the public system. That's not a government requirement. It's election year this year. Have we mentioned it before? It's an election year. Residents in the south say a lack of parking, the state of the roads, and the time it takes for a GP or dental appointment will be some of the issues in their mind at the general election this year. Also, a Newcastle Russian high school. Ahead of the general election, Manx Radio has been visiting each constituency in the Isle of Man. We sent Chanel Suku with a Manx Radio microphone to Port Erin.
I will be voting. I think it's necessary to have democracy. I would like to see a speeding up of the Newcastle Russian school. I think it's been absolutely appalling, the amount of time, and quite frankly, I'm very disappointed with our existing representatives that it has taken so much time. Also, the roads in Port Erin are pretty potholed. to put it bluntly. So I would look for an improvement there.
I think it's important that people have their say in what's going on. They've got to decide health, seeing the doctors, and also seeing dentists, because we are short of both. And it's a worry for the whole community.
If the 20 mile an hour limits on cars in this bit is still low, I'd like to see it changed back to 30.
We definitely struggle on Church Road with parking and signage to this side of the village. The other side, Station Road, get a lot of customers. People tend to think our businesses are the backs of the other businesses, so we could really use some extra signage. More available parking would be brilliant, because we have a lot of trade vans everywhere. There's works going on in many different businesses, so a lot of our parking spaces are taken up with work vans. That's a big issue, and that makes access for disabled people, elderly people, and people with young children can't park, which is going to put them off coming down, which then affects all the businesses in Port Erin.
I know a few months ago the DOI introduced the 8S service, which was connecting Peel to the south. Have you noticed how are more people using it?
Honestly, I've not noticed, to be honest. I quite often go up the Sound, which is where it ends, and I go up there on a Wednesday. The bus is always empty when they get up there, but I do think that will change with, I mean, coach parties will start this month. That's going to have a massive effect, and I do think it will help, because it's easier access for tourists. They don't want to hop on and off if they don't know where they're going. So hopefully, fingers crossed, yeah, we'll see a positive change with that.
In case you didn't know, on the 13th of August, Thursday 13th of August, the House of Keys will be dissolved. On Wednesday the 26th of August, candidate nomination period closes. And the big day, Thursday 24th of September this year, from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m, the voting booths will be open. And it's down to you. Robert's on now. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, it's a bit of a monk suit day today, a bit of a pea soup day today. It's a bit chilly in the corner. Yeah, I was going to talk about the Manx punk scene.
The punk scene?
Yeah, they have a thing over at the Rovers. Go on. They have a thing over at the Rovers whereby they have a load of people who get together, a load of teenagers and stuff like that, and they get together and sleep with mods and monk soup and things like that, you know.
Are teenagers into the punk scene?
Yeah, I'd probably say they would be. They do a lot of females and males. I think it takes about 6 months for them to come off. But yeah, they usually okay. They're usually quite good.
Are you a punk, Robert?
Well, I've done Sleep for Mods in the past.
Wow. Do you wear punk Punk clothes?
Kebab spiders and things like
kebabs,
that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. My word.
You know,
well,
them.
Let us know more about that. We'd like to know the punk scene on the... I thought you were going to talk about steampunk, but never mind. It's now... Thank you, Robert. It's now over 5 years since the Manx Care chief exec was given a 5-year contract to fix Nobles and the health service. Can you pass this question on for Thursday? Thank you, Dick. Yeah, we'll give that question on Thursday. Peter's called up as well saying, why have heating oil prices doubled on the Isle of Man when the crude oil price hasn't really moved? Well, it's moved recently, hasn't it? So we tried to find out why heating oil's gone up. It's a good question. The key thing is that crude oil is only the raw ingredient. Heating oil is what you get after it's been refined, transported, stored and supplied. And those stages, apparently, are where the prices really increase. Heating oil is closely linked to diesel, and global demand for diesel has been very strong. So refineries are producing more diesel, which tightens the supply of heating oil. And guess what? Supply and demand, the price goes up. And then you've got the Isle of Man factor. All fuel has to be shipped in smaller volumes. So when transport and storage costs rise, it tends to hit places like the Isle of Man harder than bigger markets. On top of that, the cost of refining itself has gone up. Energy, staffing and processing, certainly energy costs have gone up, and suppliers often buy fuel in advance, so there's a delay. What you're paying now may reflect higher wholesale prices from a few weeks or even a few months ago. So even if crude oil looks fairly steady, it's everything that happens after it's been pulled out of the ground, the refining, the diesel demand, the shipping and the timing that's driving the price up. Does that help? Well, it's not going to help with the price, but I do hope you know a bit more about regarding that. And again, people are talking about the absolute forest of poles that are going up for 20 miles per hour. We don't know that it's for 20 miles per hour, do we? Are Peel people going to go to the Isle of Man? I'd just like to say that all the questions for the candidates, like dental doctor's appointments, when they asked of the last candidates who got into the government 5 years ago, well, they were. And presumably you, the voter, will judge the current lot on their responses and what they've done since. When was the last time you saw a policeman on the beat? Who's supposed to stop bikes and electric scooters in Strand Street, also on the pavements along the Promenade Hotel side, says Brian. I know, I've noticed them. So we're back with an open line tomorrow, and Thursday, Theresa Cope is on. The Manx Care Chief Executive will be on. If you want to get a message in beforehand, 682-631 on the answer phone, or email maninline@manxradio.com. In the meantime, thanks for joining in today. Thanks to Chris on the phones. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. WINT.